Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. This is episode 51, and I'm in total fangirl mode today. It's Fangirl Friday over here at Aesthetic Record. We have today the man, the myth, and 1,000% the legend, Larry Blevins, who really needs no introduction at all. Captain Cosmetic, he's a physician assistant in Florida, and he is the founder and CEO of Village Institute of Plastic Surgery. He's also an ASLMS fellow. He runs a fellowship. He has a great practice. He's a mentor, I think, to every big name in the entire industry ever in the history of all aesthetics. He really is like a big deal. And if you guys listen to the podcast, I talk about him, I think, every single week I mention his name. And he's here today in the flesh to talk all about what it means to be an aesthetic injector right now, the pathway, his fellowship, how it's helping injectors to learn and to grow, his own practice, Center of Excellence, what he's doing with the training, with MERS, with Galderma, all the things. So Larry, I am so excited to have you on For the Record. Welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to have this conversation. You're one of my favorite people.
Ah, well, I appreciate that. It's funny how I actually knew you. You don't even know the story, but a couple of years ago, it was during COVID. MERS had these like fireside chat kind of things and online. I don't know what you guys called yourself, like the Suicide Squad, but not that. You're like the Aesthetic Squad, and it was you and Audrey and Erica and a whole big group. And I heard you speak on a virtual conference. I'm like, I don't know that guy, but I've got to find him, because everyone's like, oh, whatever the business questions are, just ask Larry. Oh, injection questions, just ask Larry. Everything was just ask Larry. I was like, I got to freaking find out who is Larry. And so, you know, as the world turns, here we are now, and I've gotten to meet you over Aesthetic Next and spend some time with you, and I'm thoroughly impressed. You deserve all the praise, and I'm so glad to have you here. But I want to start with, I mean, you have a very interesting past. You were in the Army. You did the whole 20, I mean, you've been 20 years in this game. You've done the whole medical thing in the Army, started out as a PA there. Now you're here. So give us the down and dirty on what brought you to this moment right now.
So joined the military and just fell in love with it. I really enjoyed it. My whole time in, I enjoyed it from A to Z. Enjoyed the camaraderie, the athleticism, the discipline. It was just a good time. I knew right when I joined the military, I went to work. A PA is different in the military. In the military, if you're an MD, a DO, or a PA, you're a battalion medical officer. My last couple of years in the military, they were bringing in nurse practitioners for that as well. But you're a battalion medical officer. So as a medic, you work for PA. So I went. So PA school in the military is very tough to get into. Made it through PA school. When you make it through PA school in the Army, you have to do 6 years of family medicine. So I did 6 years of family medicine, but I didn't quite know what I wanted to specialize in. I did derm for a little while. My first trip to Iraq, I was the only medical officer that they had in the battalion. We were in Mosul during these new things called IEDs. And all the soldiers, when we were running missions and doing these raids and whatever, when I was along, they were like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad the PA's here, docs, what they call you in the Army. And they felt secure when I was there, which I can say in the Army, you get really good training and trauma. But you as a person, almost like new aesthetic providers, it's a little bit, I don't want to use the word fake it until you make it. You know, the little analogy of ducks paddling really fast under the water. Then on top, they seemed calm and cool. I knew what I wanted to do, but I knew I was going to be in the military. So I went back and did a fellowship in general surgery, which I really specialized. I did a bargain with the Army. 90% of trauma in U.S. is blunt trauma. And we were all of a sudden experiencing these new things called IEDs. And then, you know, we'd have these big horrific gunshot wounds. The Army sent me to Baghdad, and I worked out at Embassina Hospital. If you've ever seen the show, Baghdad ER, it ran on HBO for about 3 years. And then Army Times was always in my face, or National Geographic. They were filming everything I did. I was a unique person because I was one of the only people ever to be able to take a camera into war and film everything I did. So it was very unique for me. I would have all these soldiers. I had my battle buddy had the phone, and so did I. If you're injured and you've got to call home, here's the phone. And I would hear all these conversations. These soldiers were dying, but they felt like, I don't know. It's funny how a young person feels like the only thing they cared about was this horrific scar or this burn. And I would always say, son, we're going to just take you back. We're going to save your life. When we get back to Fort Bragg, I'll fix that for you. I know what to do. I'll be able to fix that for you. But I didn't. When I got back to Fort Bragg, of course, they found me. So I had the Army. There was this new thing called Army Freedom Fund. The Army would send me off to these advanced trainings to learn scar rejuvenation. So I flew down here to Florida a lot. I worked under Dr. Fezza, who's out of Sarasota. Great guy, just an incredible practitioner. And he taught me a tremendous amount to do with lasers. And then we were using neuromodulators to soften scars. We were, at the time, there was only Botox. And then I was using Radius in 2006. So I felt like I had this really in-depth training. The other part of my journey here, in my career, I was, you know, I grew up in this small town in Virginia. And when somebody's pulled over and has their hazards on, it's courtesy to just pull over and help them. So I pulled over to this guy. And right when I turned the corner, he said, I said, you need any help? And he's pushing down on the radiator and it's steaming. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Next thing I know, I wake up full days later from what I remember. That probably wasn't days later, maybe the same day, but later. And I'm in ICU. I've got these, what they called, my whole face is wrapped. My arms are wrapped. They said, I've got third degree burns on my face. I've got my whole arm is burned, horrendous pain, because we just treated burns different then, but I'm in horrendous pain. So I personally, you know, I can't say I was ever a good looking guy, but I just felt like I didn't have these enormous scars. And so I had a personal hand on a personal idea of what it's like to be scarred. And the fear and the wanting someone to be an expert on being able to fix those scars. So I just dived into it full go. And then I can just tell you, and if you can do scars, aesthetics was super simple. So, and it was kind of unique because at this time in the military, I was the only, maybe I would say the only, but I know I was the only PA that was an aesthetic. So my schedule was, you know, filled up for 6 months, people flying from all over the country for me to fix their scars or burns. I was really big with burns. I could do skin grafts and transplants, or, you know, hairs, that. But I couldn't wait to get out because I was so excited. I had all this talent, but I didn't know what the civilian side was like. Well, I bought into a plastic surgery practice. And I would say that first year when I moved in, they were doing maybe $2 million a year. And within the first year, we went to maybe $4 million. And I brought in a lot. I've always really kept my eye on technology. That's always been my like favorite thing. What's coming out? What's around the corner? And at that time, I'd saved a lot of my money in the military. So I had a little bit of money saved up and I bought a bunch of lasers and started my practice. And I grew their practice. I doubled their practice within a year. And at that point in my life, I just said I didn't want to spend my life, the rest of my life, working for someone else and giving them my talent. So I just decided to do my own thing. Of course, I had to hire one of them to be my medical director. But that's where I started. And, you know, 15, 20 years later, it blossomed into a really big practice, and we do a tremendous amount of surgeries plus aesthetics. And I can say my career now, moving from, you know, sick and injured to healthy, happy patients, just, I don't know, just that dynamics for me was saving grace. That answers some of it.
There's a lot there, Larry. I mean, I think thinking about, to your point, you know, years and years ago, IEDs burned the whole thing. Like the military back then, being a trauma officer doing that all day long, I can't imagine just the emotional roller coaster that you're on in that role. Because we talk about a lot here in aesthetics, like it's such an emotional toll on you. It sucks your soul, eats your soul. You are at a whole different level, friend. So I'm sure that you are more than well prepared for what you have to do in aesthetics. But, you know, thinking through that, you went from, and I have a brother-in-law who is a major in the Army and the whole thing, and he's used to taking orders. Like, I don't mean that in a bad way, but he's used to having a very methodical life, right? You know what you're going to do. You kind of know where you're going to be, what's going to happen. You know the rules. Civilian life's totally different. You walk out of the Army and you're like, huh, I think I'm going to go buy into a business and become a celebrity injector. Like, I don't know, you know, just for me thinking about what you would know in the military, how did you learn the business skills? How did you get the gumption to say, I'm just going to go buy into a practice and make that work? Because that's a pretty big leap.
Well, for me, I can tell you that, you know, if you look at 2004, 2005 and today, it was night and day. I wanted to learn aesthetics. So I did I don't want to say a true fellowship in plastic surgery in the Army, but when I got back, I wanted to spend all my time in plastic surgery. So I volunteered to do this full fellowship. And plastic surgery is not what you think it is. At least it wasn't for, well, it isn't, period. Plastic surgery is a lot of trauma, burns, a lot of hands, microvascular. But when you want to learn to do Botox and filler and lasers and all of the things that you would do in aesthetics, they would really say, you know, hey, that's not medicine. You want to learn to do that, do it on your own. They had this thing called the Army Freedom Fund. And they would, now I can say that was a beautiful thing for me because they would send me all over the country. And I would go to these, there wasn't a lot of nothing like you have today. I can tell you, I was super impressed with your Aesthetic Next Summit because I find that a lot of times you go to those summits and they just don't have the information that you're looking for. It was a lot of learning on my own. So for me, getting into aesthetics and teaching now is a little bit about me wanting, that's my way of giving back to the community because I know where you're at. I know what you're trying to do to get into aesthetics and what it takes to become a true competent injector. It is medicine. You have to have a medical license to get into aesthetics, but it's totally different. I do think we do need more standards of medicine and aesthetics, but aesthetics is different. It's more sales and handholding and trying to hone your skill. You know, again, trying to fake it till you make it.
Yeah, I say, you know, often that we don't support new injectors nearly enough in the industry. We do with paid for, you know, Galderma, MERS, Allergan trainings. We do an abundant amount of those, but we don't get into the real nitty gritty. You know, we don't, unless it's obviously very expensive to your point, but we don't have a lot of great introductory, heavy hitting training in the industry. You know, it's like you're either a baby injector or you're supposed to be an intermediate to advanced. And there's nothing kind of in between there for the person who's just kind of getting their feet wet and learning. But, you know, I think that is changing in some ways, but what you just said about this is actually a sales, you know, kind of a sales industry. Call the baby what the baby is. I mean, I hear every year, Aesthetic Next for sure, this is, you know, we are hard medical science. This is a medical industry. We're doing medical work. You are, but you're also in retail. You're selling. You have a patient component that's much more like a beauty salon therapist or bartender therapist than you would be if you're a surgeon and they're knocked out on the table. There's a part of this that is very much retail and very much sales heavy, and you have to learn to play the game or you will not survive here. Being a great injector is not enough. I mean, you know that. I know that you know that. You're running a big practice. But, you know, for the new injector coming in or person who's coming into aesthetics saying, I'm brand new, you know, I'm Jane Doe, day two, how do they even get in? How does someone like you say, I'll take a chance on an Alexis and let them come work for me and, you know, roll the dice?
That's a good one. In aesthetics, it's difficult for me to, you know, I can say before my fellowship, that's changed a lot for me, a tremendous amount. And I can honestly say Alexis brought a lot of that to fruition. It's difficult to get into aesthetics because you don't have experience. But you can't get experience unless someone gives you a chance. And Alexis was a beautiful example of someone that was willing to, I will come in, I'll sweep floors. I will work for no pay. I'll do whatever it takes to get this advanced training. Same with Angela, one of our other fellows that went through the program. She's asking me how to get in. And I can say on a monthly basis, somebody's always saying, hey, are you hiring? Are you hiring? And it was, you know, like when Angela asked me, and I said, well, do you have any experience? No experience. Sure enough, she goes the nurse practitioner and went to estheticians. Why? Just to get an experience in skin, touching patients, working in someone's personal space, and sales. You know, I often bring up the thing, you know, no matter what job you're in life, you're in sales, whether you're, if you're a preacher, you're selling a religion, you are in car sales, you're selling a car. In aesthetics, maybe we have the little certificate on the wall that helps us out with credibility, but it's still sales. And with sales, I mean, in, you know, a baby, a dog, or you as a patient, you can see it in someone's eyes, whether it's confidence or the ability to communicate. What separates me from an engineer? I know a vocabulary he doesn't know, and vice versa. So, and even in aesthetics, we have a whole separate vocabulary than medicine. So you have to learn that vocabulary and learn how to use that vocabulary properly. So I think in our fellowship, that's one of the things that we really focus on. But I do think there is a difficulty right now in aesthetics, and there should be. There should be a difficulty. I think you something for nothing is worth nothing. So if you get into something because you have a nursing degree or a PA or a physician, and I'm just going to all of a sudden start doing aesthetics, well, I'll just say good luck, because it's going to take you just as long to do it, fake it till you make it, as it will to do a formal type training and education. It's just years and years. I used to always say it's 5 years before you become a competent injector. So you have to see, you have to do 50 lips with this product and see how the rheology works in this type of lips and this ethnicity. And then you make your mistakes and then you fix that. I've changed that now. My feeling now a little bit, like you take Alexa, she's a perfect example. She's 2 years in and just killing the game. So I think a formal education is a way that, or a formal training, I wouldn't say you have to have a fellowship, but formal training is the way to look at getting into aesthetics.
Well, I think too, so for those of you who may not have listened to Lex's episode, she was, I think, the first fellow you ever had, right? So the very first one, and I want to get this right, American Fellowship for Aesthetic Medicine. I always mix it up.
Okay, so I would love to say that this was my brainchild, but I know, okay, so I wanted to do the fellowship route, but I can tell you the biggest saving piece in the mastermind behind our aesthetic fellowship is Dr. Soares. And we did it the same way that he did his fellowship. So there is a in-depth application process with letter of intent. You have to do a interview, and it's a pretty in-depth interview. We want to know who you are and what are your intentions? What are your plans? So it's an in-depth interview. Then 6 months long, and it's A to Z, everything in aesthetic. So you learn to do filler and threads and neuromodulator lasers. You have to spend a good 15 to 20 hours in the OR with him in facelifts, or Dr. Yi, our plastic surgeon here. She's also a big part of this, but it's just different because you get to see it from, you know, take a cadaver lab. You go to a cadaver lab and you see a dehydrated, you know, body, and you don't get to really get to see what it looks like with everything functioning. But when you're lifting that flap up and you can see that mesenteric ligament, you can visualize, you know, we would do these trochlophytic forehead brow lifts where you peel the whole face down. He can show you exactly the size of the corrugators, where they run, the thickness of the Galen, how much adipose tissue is there. And you can really visualize the anatomy. So you have to spend a fair amount of time in the OR, and then you have to do 100 supervised procedures. Then you have to take, there's, I don't know, 5 to 10 full books that you have to read. and you take this exam at the end that you have to score an 80 or above, that when someone walks out of our aesthetic program, you've got a piece of paper that we stand behind, that if you go get a job, I'll give you a letter of recommendation. And I will also in your letter of recommendation say that you better hire these people or they'll be your competition and you don't want them to be your competition. So I'm very proud of that. Very proud to be a part of it.
Well, I just want to know why everyone's not doing it. But, you know, riddle me this, Batman, as they say. You know, I think about CANS, Larry, and I'm a huge advocate of CANS because I think it's like the ACT, right? We don't know if it's the right test, but it's the test that we have to measure, you know, Adam against Carrie, against Scott, against Joe. So we have CANS. What I've always wondered about CANS, though, is like you have this test where people are taking it and, you know, they're learning about a lot of these things that you're talking about in a book, you know, some didactic program somewhere. And they're never given a chance to come amongst their colleagues who are also CANS and learn from one another. They walk in, take a test, they're done. There is no learning practical part of it. It's just a test. I think back to all the years I was in school, you know, college, PhD school, the whole thing. I love that. So I was like, I know the answer. I'm going to walk in, take the test and be done. But I missed the collegial learning component because I just walked in and took a test. Like, I feel like even with CANS, despite in all of its goodness and trying to do the right thing, we still miss a part of the experiential learning and getting all the skills beyond just, you know, the rote memory of things. Like you mentioned the cadaver lab. I could look at a cadaver right now and tell you a lot about it because I've done like 50 of those things over the years of hosting them. But you give me a real face of a real person who's living, breathing, and, you know, blood is flowing, and it's a whole different ballgame. So I think that you're onto something in the sense that we don't have the practical learning of it. So even if we have standards, how do we act those standards out in practice to prove that we don't just read the book, we can also do the thing with the patient in front of us, you know, close personal space, like you said before, that's a different skill set. So how do we solve that problem if we're just looking at things like, you know, CANS and tests and things and not doing fellowships everywhere?
Okay, let me first start out and say when it comes to CANS, Jerry Obey, who's one of the lead people with CANS, is one of my favorite people in the aesthetic space by far.
Oh, she's awesome.
Best educators, one of the just nicest people, and I am a huge Jerry Obey fan, but I'm a PA, and at the time Alexis was a PA, and I talked to Jerry because Jerry helped me also with this, because at one point we were starting a PA plastic surgery PA fellowship, and that was about 8 years ago. Actually, I think Scott Callahan was the president of it. It only lasted maybe a year. PAs are just different than MPs. You just don't have that, I don't know, that lobbying body or whatever it comes with. But CANS was a big part of that. I can tell you when it comes to a fellowship, though, we went into it with the thought of how do we give back? How do we help out these new practitioners? And I can tell you that has been one of the biggest, I won't say saving graces, I don't know the right word, one of the best things I've ever done for my own practice. Because, you know, our goal was, when you finish, here's your diploma, good luck, I'll write you a letter of recommendation. But Alexis said, I want to work here. And I was really excited about that. And the same with the second fellow that went through, Angela, we hired them. I think the fellowship is a beautiful way that you can spend 6 months with someone and really see what kind of a quality person, do they fit in with your staff? Do they fit in with your goals in life? And are they going to be a great provider? And then you have the opportunity to hire them, or, you know, right now I would say almost every fellow that's went through, I would have hired, which that's part of the interview process and trying to get in. Cause, you know, we started out, there was, you know, a few people applying. Now we're getting, you know, right. It's set up currently for NPs and PAs only. We're in Florida. So believe me, if we were in any other state, we would open it up to RNs as well, but just in Florida, you have to be an MP or PA. But now we're getting a lot of physicians applying for the fellowship because, you know, they're the same way. You just can't learn this stuff on your own. It's difficult to learn on. You have to spend 20 hours a week. We do it a little bit different. You get paid to go through it.
So they have A4M. I'm sure you're familiar with that. They do a fellowship, I think, for physicians who are, you know, crossing over to the dark side, and they have to go do some hands-on, some, you know, more tactile or more practical knowledge. But I think through, you know, you mentioned CANS and Jerry, I agree with you that the whole CANS idea was brilliant. I mean, it's still brilliant. It's a level playing field to say these are the standards. So you have a set of standards. I'm sure they're not that much different than what we see in CANS. Even A4M has their set of standards. How do we as an industry say who is the standard, or what is the kind of standard we want to set? Because I think people look at you and say, whatever Larry Blevins says is the standard, we're here for it, we're doing it. You know, that's what we think, we agree with you. I have to validate that, obviously, and do all the math and things. But I'm sure it's not that far off from what CANS is doing, or, you know, the other people. How do we make that a standard that says if you're going to inject in this country and you're going to be an injector in any state, no matter what the regulations are, nurse, PA, NP, physician, this is what you're expected to be able to do? Adverse event management, you know, everything with the patient before you're able to start injecting, before you get malpractice as an injector. Like, how do we start making those things part of a learning criteria or a mastery criteria? And is it even possible?
That's a difficult one. Speaking of the A4M, Angela, that did our fellowship that went to esthetician school, also did the A4M aesthetic fellowship. And for her, she said that was just didn't pick up what you thought you were going to pick up. It was just a lot of study this module, take the test. If you're a good test taker, you can get a certification. Standards are difficult. I do think right now, last year I was at a conference. They have this top aesthetic injector, or the top 100 aesthetic injectors. They had a conference last year, and they put together this panel, and it was facial plastics, a couple plastics, myself, Scott Callahan as PAs, and then there was two or three nurse practitioners like Erica Berry and Hanya was also in there. But they're trying to put together a body. It's just trying to find the standards that we can uphold across the country that we can hold people accountable for. You know, it's difficult. Right now, Allergan is trying to start an aesthetic fellowship, or I've heard through, but it's physician only. Physicians are a little bit different because as NPs and PAs, we fall under state guidelines. And so in trying to put together that credentialing body, it's a little bit more difficult. But my fight with take the Facial Plastic Society. Let's just hypothetically say there's 2,000 members. You need a credentialing body over top of this whole thing that will give a standard and to say this is the standard for being an aesthetic provider. It's odd how, I don't know whether they don't do it because of fear of the competition or they can't quite control it. But you need a standard body over top of it that will credential it. For that standard body, take the Facial Plastic Society. You go to their boards, you go to their annual meeting, and I can say 15 years ago, when you went to their meeting there, it was packed. It was so full of people because there really wasn't a lot of different aesthetic summits and conferences out there. But let's just say there was 1,000 people there, or 800, whatever. Now, when you go, there's maybe 200, maybe 150 will show up to those conferences. So if you added in a body of an aesthetic providers, NPs, PAs, RNs that are wanting to be a part of your credentialing body, you would take that number from 200 up to probably 5,000 almost overnight. So for a credentialing body, it's a beautiful idea. You just have to have those standards there. I think the standards need to be evidence-based, sure. In aesthetics, we have a lot of this, what I'll just, you know, things that are hot, and then it'll go out, and then new things will come in. Take a mesotherapy. But every 3 or 4 years, it'll ride this train of it's new and hot and this new thing, and then it'll fade out. Those are fads, and I think it needs to be evidence-based, and it needs a credentialing part. And it's going to take enough people getting together to just say these are going to be the standards. right now, there's a lot of states trying to cut out RNs and MPs and PAs from injecting. We control probably 85% of the injection space. If we don't start coming together and controlling some of the things that are happening in aesthetics, you're going to find yourself a little bit upside down. So that's my fight, and it has been my fight for the past couple of years, trying to put together a credential. This has nothing to do with me. Our fellowship, I get paid nothing for it. We take no money for it. It's a 501c, and every dime that comes in goes right back out the door. And sometimes we'll get some equipment, but other than that, there's no be there for me. And I'm not trying to make anything out of this. It's just my way. I have a full practice, and I do pretty good with my practice. So it's not about the money. It's just trying to find a standard there and to help other providers reach that standard. I wished I had that answered. What do you think about it?
You hit a hot button for me, because several years ago, and I've never told anyone this story, this was probably 6-7 years ago, a big meeting that happens in Vegas every year that has since changed ownership. The director and I were at his house having dinner with he and his wife and another sales rep. We were doing like a meet and greet kind of powwow thing. And he said, my audience is dwindling and I need to find a way to bring in more people. And I said, well, you have to have a meeting that's inclusive of non-physicians. It was a physician-only meeting. They still really marry themselves to that, like hardcore, hard in the paint. And he said, I just can't do it. If I do that, I'm going to be the laughing stock of physicians everywhere. I just can't bring them in. I mean, it was just such an emphatic, I'm not going to do it. There's no way. And I was just like shocked. Number one, as a business person, to your point, it makes total sense, because there are so many more non-physician injectors who are also doing so much more volume. Like the entire aesthetic industry, volume-wise, is dependent on people like you, not on physicians who are doing it here and there. But like from a business perspective, first of all, that's stupid. That's just an idiot move. But from a patient advocacy, patient safety, industry evolution perspective, it's the antithesis of progress. I look at Rod Rourke, who everyone knows I love dearly, and he's like, Tiffany, we have to train them all. If we don't, they end up in my OR because I'm fixing a problem that I could have solved by just telling them how to do it, right the first time. It's like, why would I not train them all? That's just not smart. And again, he is a trainer by heart. That's what he does. But here's the guy in plastics, like the plastic surgeon, saying, of course you train everyone. Of course you do. And the other guys are saying, gosh, no, they're not a physician. I'm never going to train them. That's just careless. And I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, Larry, what in the heck is going on? Am I in the Twilight Zone? We're all in this thing together, right? We're all here together in this industry, injecting, learning, growing, developing. Patient safety is at stake, adverse events, products are evolving, we're having to get smarter. We have got to figure this out. And I don't know who it's going to be, to your point. I don't know what board takes it over, but it has to be someone, to your point, that's an oversight board who's not in bed with anyone else who can do it. Because the PAs, unfortunately, you guys have lobbying with the medical board, so you don't have a whole lot to stand on because they kind of take over. The nursing board, this is always fighting with the medical board, so they're in their own little world. And the states are now involved saying, you can't. GFEs are getting more crazy. New York has new laws that just passed. It's a wild west out there from a legal perspective, and we have to carpe diem on our own. We have to seize the day on our own and figure this out. Like, as an industry, we have to collectively rise up and figure out our path forward, or someone else is going to figure it out for us, and we don't want what they're going to give us, I don't think. So I'm in your camp. We got to get this thing done. Someone out there, call me, volunteer. Let's get this done. That's my thought.
I totally agree with you on that. I wish they looked at it the same way. I did when we were starting that PA, we'll just call it a fraternity or an association. I was there in Vegas for the, it was at the National Plastic Surgery Summit, and they put on a course that was a master lip injector course through the Plastic Surgery Society. They only had one. It was incredible for the time. Now we're talking 2009, and maybe it's around 2009, and they put on one course, and it filled up. Like, there was 200 people there. And there 200 people showed up for the conference to do that course. And they only allowed, I think there was maybe 30 of us in the class. And you had to do, it was set up kind of neat. You had to do this lecture. There was three plastic surgeons teaching about injectables. then you had to go back to your hometown and you had to have a plastic surgeon or a dermatologist. They had to supervise 100 injections, no, 50 injections. And you got this certification through the Plastic Surgery Society that you were a master injector. They only did one. And when I asked, was one of the physicians that was running it was in my town. I was in Orlando at the time. And they didn't want to put on another one purely because all the board members had complained that they were creating their competition. And I love the fact that you said that surgeon that was that would rather teach someone so they didn't have to fix their issues because they're just looking out for themselves sometimes when they're just worried about competition. There's enough business out there for all of us. I mean, half of the providers in my town here I've trained, Orlando, all with in Central Florida, I would, you know, you can come through my clinic, even if you're not in the fellowship, and you can come and shadow any day you want, and it's free of charge. And I don't do that. I do that purely to say you can come in and at least see what the standard should be. So if you're at your clinic, one of the big things we're getting in Florida that I have a hard time with is these little salon booths that are popping up, that they're basically doing aesthetic medicine in a hair salon. Well, you know, what happens with your sharps containers? Because you cannot transport hazardous waste. If you get caught with a sharps container in your car, you're just taking it to the dump. You're talking a major fine and a lot of money. And there's no, if you had any form of an accident or got pulled over, or got searched, there's just a lot of things that we are doing now in aesthetics because we're not allowing this, you know, inclusiveness that everything that providers are just saying, I'm going to go out, I'm going to work through in a hair salon and do my injections. Well, that's all fine and dandy, but what happens when something goes wrong? What are you going to do? Do you have all the equipment there to take care of that? And those are things that, you know, what I just feel like you're flying by the seat of your pants. There definitely needs to be standards. Somebody needs to step up and kind of take this by, you know, one of these bigger fellowships need to do it too. Even if it's the Cosmetic Society, they were way on board. They were all, I went to their meeting and Sheena Barbarino was one of the head people on their board. She brought me in and we did this big talk about exactly what you and I've been talking about for 30 minutes. And they were all so excited about it. And as I walked out, every one of them were like, of course we'll vote. We'll bring you all in. And I told them, you'll bring 3,000 people to your organizational body. 3 weeks later, I call and they voted it down. And I don't know why. I think when the doors close, first off, you've got, if they're going to be the governing body for it, there's some responsibility there. And I think that, you know, you have the power of that. If there's somebody that would have the power, it would probably be you more than me.
Well, it is a live mission. It's a live mission, Larry. We started working on it years ago. We called it Core HCP, and we had a whole curriculum together and a lot of standards. And even within our own group of people who were looking at like kind of being the standard setters, you know, the core advisory group, there was infighting and problems. I think that's part of it too, is you get in a room, 10 highly skilled injectors sit around a table and say, let's talk about the standards. And it becomes too much of the minutia and it just becomes debauch. It's crazy. Fighting that I'm no more than you, you know more than me. And it kind of gets backstabby. I think just like in medicine, right, a physician can still practice in a surgical, you know, in an operation the way he or she believes is the best for the patient within guidelines. We need to just build guide rails. I don't think we need to build, you do a lip this way. And I think people hear standards and they think to themselves, you're going to make me dictate my cheek injections. No, we're going to say you should do it in this way where it's safe, effective, sterile. What environment should you use? How should you treat the adverse event? How should you freaking document things and have clinical documentation of what you've done, like a true medical practice would? Like even those things may make me crazy. But I think we in doing it, we learn quickly that you get a little bit too involved in the weeds and you got to really pull it back. But it does require a governing body. I think people do vote behind closed doors in different ways. I would agree with that. Unfortunately, they tell you what you want to hear. But I think the time is now. You know, we've got to do it quick. Cause, you know, to what you said about the hair salon, when you have no standards, no one knows what to comply with. It's just like children without rules. They have no idea what to do because they don't, mom and dad won't set any rules for them. And I think we're in that kind of position right now where so many of you are so great, and then there's everyone else, and we're trying to figure out how to kind of bridge the gap. But not to dwell on that any longer, because I think we both align there. What comes next for the industry? Because you're a guy that is on the cutting edge. You mentioned you love technology. I think you, when it comes to lasers, no one, I think, in the whole country knows more than you about lasers. But what's next for us in aesthetics, and where do we go, despite our standards being a hot mess, from a treatment perspective? And what's the next big thing we should be focusing on besides semaglutide, which is taking over all of our worlds? But what else is out there, Larry? I just got my labs today. I'm about to get real skinny, y'all. So come back in 6 weeks and see if I've lost 10 pounds.
I have two things to say. One is I sit on a lot of the medical boards, not medical boards, but the advisory boards. And whenever we do those advisory boards, you'll get the Dr. K or Gino Bay, that their input seems to dominate a lot of the conversation, which is, they're always very good. Very, I mean, those two are just incredible practitioners. But I do agree with you that you need input from people, and it needs to be behind. It needs to be, this is my input, this is your input. Then they put it together and kind of vote. I do like that. Now you're getting into my other subject, though, which is like the cutting edge technology. When you ask like what's coming around the corner, what's new, what's hot, I think that's where my passion lies. And when it comes to lasers, that was my, a lot of these practitioners go into aesthetics, and I'll give you a key little pearl here. My aesthetic, though I knew how to do injectables and neuromodulators, but I would say when I first started, 85% of my practice was consumed by a laser and doing laser rejuvenation, laser scar rejuvenation, and working with platforms. Like I had one of the first smart lipo platforms in Florida, and that's where I really kind of made my headway. I think technology, if you do it's like a surgeon that does a facelift, Dr. Soares, who I feel like I'm one of a really talented injector, but, and Dr. Soares is too, don't get me wrong, but after he does a facelift on them, they're his for life. They will not leave you for anything. Same a little bit with lasers. You know, neuromodulator, a lot of patients will look for a price, and they will go, I found Botox for $10 a unit. Over here, they're having a special for $8. And they'll jump around for neuromodulators. Fillers a little bit different. You do build a fair amount of loyalty with fillers, especially if you're good with, say, lips or tear troughs, jawline. But lasers are one that if you do a laser resurfacing on someone, because it is a journey, it is some hand-holding, and there is some art behind it, it's as difficult to learn how to do CO2 laser as it is to be a competent injector. So it's not one that you can just pick up and do. When you do resurfacing on someone's face, they just seem to be your patient for life, and they trust you to do your cosmetic injectables. So a lot of these practitioners that are going out and just starting out with, Botox and a little bit of filler in the areas that they feel comfortable with, I would say look at platforms. And it doesn't have to be a laser. It can be RF microneedling. It can be ultrasound, radio frequency. I mean, whatever you're looking at, but platforms are a beautiful way to build your practice and build your brand. Learn how to communicate, learn how to sell. Coming around the corner, is it getting exciting? I think that, I don't know, that's just always my favorite subject to talk to. Every time a rep comes in, I can say your reputation in the region, wherever you are, a lot of times is controlled by your reps, whether it's your Galderma rep or your Allergan rep or Prolinium, whoever it is, or your laser platform. I think you need to be nice to those people, invite them in, give them your time, listen to what they have to say, because when they walk out, what they feel about you, which I know you have the experience in this, but what they say about you behind your back is your reputation in the region. But I really enjoy when these reps come in because I get to hear about the latest technology that's out there. And then I can tell you that aesthetics is there's a fair amount of aesthetics that is just smoke and mirrors. There's, you know, one of the beautiful things I'm allowed to do, I'm an investigator for a capital investor group out of New York, and they would hire me to come in. Let's just take like Vaser. That was one that I had looked at. They're going to invest, let's say, $100 million in buying the rights in North America for this technology. And they don't really know, they don't really care if it's going to work. They just want to know, is it sellable? Can I build an interest for it? So they'll put, let's say, $50 million into buying the rights to this thing, and then they'll build a sales force around it. They'll build it up through, you know, talk shows and radio and build up this brand for it. They'll make $75 million. Then they'll sell it off to somebody for their $50 million, and then move on to the next technology. So there is a little bit of, you know, getting something through the FDA, you have to prove that it has a 1 or 2 point improvement and you didn't cause harm. So take lasers. That's a very good example. These new lasers that are out are, you can do you know, hair removal, you can do laser rejuvenation, skin rejuvenation, you can do veins with it. That one platform does all of these. It will, and it does have FDA approval for that. That technology is good at laser hair removal, but a laser, let's take a YAG, like a diode YAG laser, good for hair removal. And it will do laser resurfacing because it has a chromophore for water, but it's not going to do the same thing as a CO2 that's a pure chromophore. So these new laser companies will come out and they'll just, you know, have all these platforms that'll do all these things in one platform. And then the cost is going up astronomically. I mean, you literally could buy lasers, you know, but I don't know if we have 15 platforms here, but we have a tremendous amount of platforms. We have all of the chromophores in our clinic for, you know, well, there's only really three chromophores. You have oxygenated heme, melanin, and water. Well, we have the new chromophore, just tattoos, but that's, we don't really consider that a pure chromophore. And that's new technologies is coming out. I will tell you, there's some new stuff coming out that I'm excited about.
Give us a hint. Can you give us any hints on what's coming out? Because I'm sure you do advisory boards a lot, so you know before the rest of us do, and you're on an NDA, I'm guessing, with lots of people. But can you give us any hints about the direction it's going in? Like, what kind of thing is going to come out, even at a high level?
Well, I can tell you the new things that are coming out. If you're looking to get into platforms, right now is your time, and it's the time you need to buy now. I always buy platforms, you know. At the end of the year, you have profit. And let's just hypothetically say you've got $100,000 profit. You have two choices. One, pay 33% interest on your money. Other states might be a little bit more, but in Florida, 33% on your money. Or you can use a 179 tax plan and you can write off a large portion of that in taxes. You're going to spend your money. I think right now is the time to buy because the new technologies that are coming out. Take my IPL laser. It's been a couple months ago, but I looked at my IPL and I had over 27,000 treatments on my IPL, where I paid, I want to say around $90,000 for my IPL, paid it off, let's just say a year. And now every time I use it, I have my cost. It cost me to be a provider, my insurance overhead, an assistant, my expendables that go with it. But the rest of it is profit. You know, when you do a neuromodulator, you think, oh, if I could do neuromodulator all day long every day, I can make a fortune because in 10 minutes, you made $400. But in that $400, you know, let's just say you're charging $11 a unit. You had to pay $5 to $6 a unit just to buy that product. And lasers and platforms, you own that. So you don't have to every time buy a new buy the product. But now the laser platforms are changing, and it's coming around the corner really quick where you're going to get this card that every time you do a procedure, now the company gets paid for that and you get whatever you're charging. But let's just hypothetically say every time that the card goes out to the manufacturer, let's just take Luminous or any of the big manufacturing companies, Candela or Cutera, any of those, that, you know, now buy them a little bit cheaper. You actually can buy them about what I used to pay for them 10 years ago. But every time you do a procedure, they get a reading that goes through their card that you've got to pay them for that. Not only do you have to pay them, if you don't, they can shut it down remotely. That's the part you don't want to be a part of. So if you want to be a little bit, maybe on my business plan, which is buy a platform, spend a fair amount of money, learn how to use it properly. But then when you pay it off, it's yours to keep. The new things coming around is going to be different. So that's probably one of the biggest things that I see. It's going to change the industry. Some of the companies coming out, like right now, they've got Acne is a really big one. I'm a big speaker. I don't know what they call us, not a KOL or luminaries for Cutera. They have a new laser that's out that will completely cure acne in 3 treatments. So that's pretty exciting for young. You know, we look at lasers and platforms as somebody in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. But now my 15-year-old who's now, you know, puberty and has a lot of acne issues, that would be a beautiful platform to be able to treat and to say, I can take care of that for you.
I feel like if they can nail the acne story, you know, nail the acne thing, first of all, we open up the industry to a whole new group of people, right? A whole new demographic who can't currently engage with us because they're not the appropriate candidate yet for lips and volume and things. But that's a much different ballgame if we can get acne on the table. Like, that's crazy good. But I think what you mentioned about consumables is reality. And people are, they've almost become combative about laser, even more than they are historically, because, like, I'm going to have to buy it and then pay for it again to use it. I think there is some messaging there that the companies are going to have to really work through of how they sell that, make it palatable. But, you know, you're the only guy I know that when the laser rep comes in and says, you'll pay this off in 1 year, it actually happens that way. Like, you're the only person I know that it actually goes down that way. But I think it's because you believe in it so passionately. I think when you go into platform sales as a practice, selling it to patients, you have to believe it. And you have to understand so much where Sculptra fits versus laser, or where, you know, chemical pills fit versus laser. You have to know everything about it so that you know when to choose it. And I see so many practitioners who buy one, they don't really get it at the level that you do, and they don't know when to choose it. And they'll choose what they do know instead because it's easier to explain, easier to do. They know the outcome is predictable. And so I think it's one of those things where you have to either go all in and, like, just go do it and learn it and become a student of it, or it's not going to ever work for you revenue-wise the way that you want it to really pay off long-term. So it's one of those things. I don't know nearly enough about it, but I know that when you go, you got to go all in because you can't kind of half-ass laser. You got to either do it or not do it.
I think part of that is, you know, when you buy a lot of providers, I teach lasers and any, a lot of your platforms out there, I'll do a lot of teaching on those, and they'll buy a platform and I'm in their clinic and I look over in the corner and I'll see a Luminous Ultra Pulse. And I'm like, what are you doing with that? And they're like, I don't know. There was a provider here wanted it. We didn't really use it, and it's just been sitting there. And I'm like, ooh, well, what would you take for it? I'll buy it from you. I own like 4 of those now because I found them in other practices. The difficulty is you'll go to a conference, like say your conference, and they get excited. They'll see this new platform, and they want to buy it and start using it in their practice. They don't. What's the biggest issue physicians have, if you had to guess? I would tell you it would be the ability to change. They want to do the same things that they've been doing. You know, there's this old saying, when you graduate medical school, you have 20 medications for one disease. 5-10 years later, you're using one drug for 20 diseases. They don't want to change. To get a platform in your practice, to truly start using it, You have to put it in your menu of service. So what I do every time, every year, I pick a platform. So I have like three or four providers that are in with me. They're not in my practice. They're not even my competition. One of them is 3 hours away. There's one in Georgia and then one in North Carolina. That I will do the research every year. What's hot? What's coming around the corner? What do you feel like? What do I feel like we need to invest in? And then I will go in and do the talking for us. I'll talk to the reps and the regionals to say, how much would you give me for one? Talk them down a little bit. Let's just hypothetically say it's 140. Well, what if I bought two? Ooh, we can get it maybe to 120. Okay. What if I bought three? What if I bought four? So now I'm buying them, let's say 50,000 less than most people are doing. So I'm picking the technology. My three people that are with me gets the benefit of my pricing. I will put together the vocabulary for that platform, send that out, because your staff has to know the like when you and I were talking earlier, the art and aesthetics, one of the big keys to aesthetics is the ability to sell, communicate. Well, your front desk person, I don't want to say the least paid person, but the person who sits at the front desk, who is, you know, not a care coordinator, not a provider, not an assistant that sees it every day in my room, that gets to hear my vocabulary with the patient. They're the ones when a patient calls to set it up or ask questions about it, are answering most of the questions. So that vocabulary has to be picked up by your front desk, that they understand it. It needs to go on your website. So what we will do, like when you brought up earlier, my goal is always to pay off a platform within 90 to 120 days. Very difficult to do, but I'll tell you how I do it. So the menu of service is already there. The menu is on my website, and the vocabulary's put out between amongst the staff. And then I will pre-sell, like, you know, coming soon, opening introductory price, where something's normally, I remember when RF microneedling came out, Secret RF, the very first RF microneedling device, I bought it. I was one of the very first practitioners in the country, because I knew in 2019, 20, 21, 22, you see what RF microneedling is doing now. I knew it was going to be that then. So I'll put the menu of service out. I'll pre-sell it. At that time, they were selling RF microneedling $800. That's what they wanted us to charge. And I'm like, okay, retail price is going to be around $2,800, introductory price at $1,800. And then all of my patients will sign up. I'll book a good 4 hours of my day, that first 90 to 120 days of actually taking purchase of. Because, you know, when you buy it, some of these companies, you know, Qtera is a good one, that they will give you a 90-day no payment. If you go through a bank or something like that, 30 days from now, you've got that $2,200 payment. Now, these ROIs that the reps will come in and say, if you sell this many at this price, this is your revenue you'll make, and you'll pay it off in this amount of time. Those ROIs, throw them out the door. They just don't work unless you are willing to do the work. Which means right when you decide to buy. So prior to deciding to buy it, I'm not even going to talk to the rep until I've decided what I want to buy. Now I've put together the menu, the vocabulary, we're ready to go. So that the minute that machine hits my door, we're off and running, and we're not delayed and waiting, spending time. Because physicians, if you let them do that, they'll go in and they'll buy four or five platforms because they're going to get into lasers, and then they'll just, three of them will sit there. One of them they'll use.
They become a coat rack in the back corner. Well, like I said, I could talk to you all day long. We are like so far over an hour that we've got to wrap the show up, Larry. We're over the line here. But, you know, as I said in the beginning, I'm a total fangirl of yours. And I think your perspective on laser, if people learn nothing else from you, which would be shocking, but the way that you think about laser, how you think about selling it, and just how important it is to practice, to me, is where we have to go. We can only have so many injectables in the world. Like, we're running out of places to stick filler at this point. We can only do so much of filler. we've got to find other ways to improve skin texture, tone, scar vision, acne, all the things that you're mentioning. That's, to me, that's where, along with the bioregenerative, you know, things, the biostimulators, we have to get into platform play. So I'm in your camp, as you know. I'm always in your camp. But give the rest of our audience an idea of where to see you next. Are you going to be on any big podiums, on, you know, on stage speaking? Where's Waldo for Larry Blevins?
As for me, you know, last year for me, I was on the road about 35 weekends of the year. It was a tremendous amount of either teaching. I did a tremendous amount of speaking last year. I'm going to try to keep some of my boards, my advisory boards, because I really enjoy those and I enjoy being a part of that community. I hope to get to your aesthetic next this year. I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of yours. I really, truly am. I had a summit talk in Sarasota where I had 250 MPs there 2 years ago when you had invited me. And all of my friends went and told me how big it was and how professionally it was put together for aesthetics. That's different. So I hope to do your summit again. That was beautiful. I commend you on that. Stick with it. Keep your way of doing it, because it's a beautiful way. It's very well done, very professional. I'm going to do a couple big talks this year. The Top Aesthetic Injectors is putting together another summit, and I will be there. I've got a big talk in Orlando in February. So if you're in my region in Orlando, find me. And, you know, I don't have a tremendous amount of plans this year. I try to, you know, my daughters are at that age where daddy just needs to be home a little. And I'm going to try to scale back a little. So I will tell you this year, if you want to see me, come find me here. And it's where I'll be most of the time. But I'll definitely be at your conference.
Well, this is your invitation. Consider it signed, sealed, and delivered. We definitely want you back. You were able, on like a two-week notice, to put together this amazing workshop, this amazing on-screen, on-stage podium presentation with no preparation. You just kind of showed up and rolled and did it. So that's my kind of people. But I think to your point about traveling so much, when you have kids, it's tough. I get it. And you've done that, right? It's time for you to take a year to be the advisor and to be in your practice. But like you mentioned, to come to your practice in shadow is free. Holy cow, Larry, you're missing the boat on the monetization of that right now. But I agree with you. It should be a thing that's not price preventative. People come learn from you. So I think that's incredible, by the way. Your fellowship, we'll put the information for your fellowship on the comments of this in the podcast post. So you can find out how to get a hold of you for that. We'll get your Instagram on there. We'll get your website on there for VIP. We'll have everything out there to find you, so they can't miss you. And your Instagram obviously has lots of great content on it all the time. It is kind of a Where's Waldo. You're always somewhere doing something fun. Maybe not this year so much, but I look forward to seeing you in September, if not before. For me, and for the record, it's the end of the road for us. Larry. We got to roll off now. But hope to see you very soon, and I will see all of you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.